Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
This one will come actually from 43 yards out. Far side hash mark, angle to the right. Aiken to snap, Mesko to hold. It all hangs right here. Set to go. Snap, ball down, kick up. Kick is on the way. Kick is good. Woo! Try to hold our breath on that one. It's a 48-yard field goal attempt for Steven Gostkowski. From this range on the season, he's 2 for 5 coming into the game. Snap the ball down. The kick on the 48-yard field goal attempt on the way. And it is good. From 48 yards, Steven Gostkowski puts the Patriots on top, 29-26. Second down and 10 for the Jets at their own 40. One lone running back, and that's Joe McKnight behind Mark Sanchez. Second down and 10. Sanchez is back to throw. He is going to be hit and sacked. Back at the 29-yard line. And a fumble on the play. Patriots recover. The game is over.
There you go. So that was the clutch time in the overtime on Sunday afternoon here at Gillette Stadium. Thanks to our own Gil Santos, Scott Zolak on 98.5 The Sports Hub for the info at the end. And the Patriots were actually able to squeeze through with a win on... why is this set up like this? Hold on a second. I thought something was really weird here. Hold on. There. That's better. Now I can actually hear.
You hear better?
Yeah, somebody was jacking with the jack.
We had all sorts of podcasts in here this morning, so maybe they're screwing around with
it. No, they're just messing around then. Okay. That's way better now because I couldn't hear what you were saying, so that's very difficult. Okay. Here we go. Patriots win. Now. Because of that, welcome into the playbook, by the way, everybody, for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. As you are probably well aware, on Tuesdays, it's Nitpick Tuesday, which we kind of pick at the nits that are left over from the previous Sunday's game. I think it's pretty clear to see that this team is flawed, that this team is going to continue to have issues throughout the course of the year. I know that you have your favorites. I have my favorites. I will share a few of those with you here momentarily. But I will tell you that while this team did get the win, did not blow the win, and darn near did that, when the ball came flying out of Devin McCourty's hands on the kick return, giving the Jets an opportunity to take the lead, which they obviously did late in regulation in that game, I have to admit, didn't really know what to think or even to say. The fact that the Patriots now have gone 3 straight weeks blowing fourth quarter leads as they have is unprecedented. And I don't really know why or even how that kind of culture enters into the equation. You know, we've made the statement here over the last couple of weeks that a lot of it, I really believe, has to do with the overall immaturity of the football team, that these guys, some of them, are not used to playing at this level. And because of that, they're not used to the level of intensity being full tilt, full time. Pardon me, Teddy, for using your phrase. But that's kind of how I looked at it. And so there are only a very few veteran players that are even around. By the way, going to London this week for the St. Louis game, there's only 14 guys left on the roster. From the last time they went to London in, what was that, 2008? So there's not a lot of guys that have actually made this trip out of the 53 that undoubtedly will make it. But it's not a lot. Not a lot of experience here. That just shows you how relatively inexperienced this team is overall. Outside of a few key veterans that are highly paid, as we all know, Tom on offense, Vince on defense primarily. The rest of it, it's not so much flotsam and jetsam, because that makes it sound cheap and tawdry, but what it is younger, inexperienced players. Remember, it's just a few short years, and I'm going to harken back to an argument I made early in the season. Just a few short years where this is one of the older, more veteran teams in the NFL. And we cried around these parts for, you know, trying to get younger because we were getting older and we were watching the end of the dynasty and what have you. And so that's exactly what the Patriots have done. They've gone out and tried to remake this team. And the fact is that they've remade this team to the point where it's now younger. You've got that right. It's not quite as seasoned as you or I want it to be or expect it to be. And that's because outside of the marquee players that are left on this team, there's just not a lot of experience, not a lot of veteran leadership, not a lot of experience, period. And so these guys just don't know how to. The only way that you know how to in the NFL is by living through it and succeeding through it. You can't tell somebody, okay, we're going to suck it up here, boys, and do this for the team and do this for the fans. That doesn't exist. Not in the NFL. The NFL is so even. There's so much parity in the NFL. My goodness. I was reading a number earlier today, a couple of different sources, but reading a number earlier today where we've already had more games decided by 8 points or less through 7 weeks of this season than we had, I believe it was, all of last year. Think about that for a second. We've had more close games decided by 8 points or less this year through 7 weeks, not quite halfway through, mind you. This is the official halfway point of the season, week eight. Actually, not even. It's 17 weeks all told when you build in your bye week, and everybody has one. So we're just now approaching. We're getting to the halfway point. And we've already got more games, more close games, through the first just under half of the year than we had all of last year. So if that doesn't mean that there isn't more parity in the NFL than there's ever been before, I don't know what else it means. It means that every team has got players, every team has got playmakers, every team has the ability to beat the opposition every week. This is what the NFL wanted. This is what pro sports loves to have. They love to have parity because we talk about it, it makes the games interesting and fun, and then every team and every market has got some interest for an extended period of time. So what we're asking as fans is we're asking the Patriots to continue doing what they've been doing throughout the double-aught decade, right? We've been asking them to stay competitive. They won 3 Super Bowl championships in that 4-year period. And they've been to 2 others since, have not won them, but they've been there. So they've kind of continued this run of success, certainly through, you know, winning the AFC East. And excuse me. Woo, that one caught me. Yeah.
Got a little frog in my throat.
Exactly. What we're asking the Patriots to do is stay competitive in a time that everybody is competitive. And they're managing to do it, but it's coming at a cost. It's coming at a cost. It's coming at the expense of our expectations, because this team can't possibly live up to those expectations. So when we nitpick here, we do so lovingly. We point out, obviously, some obvious things. And we also try to include, when we nitpick, remedies or plans for remedy. Potential remedies, potential cures for the problems that ail the team, whether it's, you know, your particular gripe is with the defensive backs who can't, you know, catch a cold, whether it's your gripe with, you know, Tom Brady at the most inopportune moments being inaccurate with his passes and throwing at the feet of his receivers, or whether it's a gripe that you might have with Brandon Lloyd who can seem to come up with a spectacular grab but can't make the routine one.
Lloyd!
Thank you. You know, I'm just saying. And then how about the play calling? That's another one, too, that I'm sure that can be at issue. So what I want you to do is consider the nitpicks under the guise of what I've just kind of discussed here. This is a league that is now full of even Steven, everybody on the same page. Patriots are 4-3, still have a dynamic offense, have a defense that may not be any better than what we've seen over the last few weeks. And by the way, let me add here at this point that I've always said, and I do succinctly believe, that what you see after 8 weeks is pretty much what you got. So it'll be interesting to note where, or even if, this Patriots team can improve at all this Sunday against the Rams in London. Because then you go into your bye week, and of course we'll be talking about this all next week without a doubt, where this team is, whether it meets your expectations, and what now are your future expectations. How have they changed for this team? This is all stuff that we'll be discussing in the next week or so. But the bottom line here is this may be what you have, folks. This may be it. This may be all you can get out of this team. Now, we saw what this team did with an offense and no defense last year, still almost won the Super Bowl. It may very well be that internally, this organization has decided, you know what, the only way we're going to win this year is to continue to do what we did last year. And so that's why when we've seen Aaron Hernandez back for a couple of weeks, we've still seen Wes Welker utilized quite a bit. He still caught, what, 8 balls this last week. So I'm just saying, it may not yet be time to morph into what we thought we were going to see earlier in the season before Hernandez went down with his high ankle sprain. The Patriots may feel like, you know, we've got just too much of a mismatch doing it this way. We need to win now. And this gets back to my original statement. And I, before the season even started, certainly made the statement, I believe, during the opening show this week. Carpe diem. While you have Tom Brady, while you have Vince Wilfork, while you have a few key pieces of the puzzle still in place, you got to win now. Style points don't matter. Winning now is of utmost importance. How much longer do you have Tom Brady? How much longer do you have Vince Wilfork? Are you going to have Wes Welker beyond this year? I personally don't believe so. But these are questions that the Patriots have to be, must be asking themselves internally. And it's kind of like, all right, we'll keep an eye toward the future. We've done a pretty good job of keeping our team competitive, which they have. You cannot deny that. They have kept them competitive. But now it's all about winning championships and cementing legacies and doing things that really have not been done much, if at all, in NFL history. Championship teams, championship players are the ones that are remembered through eternity. It's time to win. This may be the team that you have to win with. So you try to take advantage of where you know you have mismatches. And that's spreading it out, baby. Five wide, giving the defense fits, and hopefully you can outscore the opposition 35-31. That may be it. That also may be a nitpick in its own right. All right, here's how you join us on the show. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. Our ace ticket hotline is open and available for your phone calls. 508-298-0398. 508-298-0398. You can hit me up on Facebook. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. If you have not submitted a friend request, and if you have, great. We can chat and we can post and we can exchange things on the Facebook page if you like. And the Twitter address, @JRook0722. Send me a tweet, @JRook, J-R-O-O-K-E, 0722 is the Twitter page. All right, we're going to lead it off the program with Ken in North Carolina. Thanks for hanging in, Ken. You're in the playbook.
Hey, man, how are you? I owe you an apology.
Why is that?
You said 24-23. I said 34-21.
You don't owe me an apology, and I actually said 25-24, but we're nitpicking now.
Well, you know, early in the week you were.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. But anyway, you were a lot closer than I was.
I just didn't get the feel, Ken, that this team is all yet on the same page. And
well,
I
agree with you.
And that
however,
sort of was bared out.
Yes.
Yep.
And I think both teams, really, there is nothing they want more than a win against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that, Brandon Lloyd should have done a lot better job, and it might have turned that game around a lot earlier.
Might
However,
have.
However, I got a couple of points.
Okay.
Number one, and I got a great picture that I probably ought to send you. Rob Ninkovich, last year, I thought, really looked wonderful. And, matter of fact, I bought his jersey, and I had to give spell the name, and I had to give the number, because they didn't know who he was when I bought it.
Okay.
And that was on the Patriots.com network.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't know his number, and they didn't know who he was?
No.
Come on.
I'm serious. I had to look it up and give it to the gal.
Well, no, wait a second. You had to look it up, so shame on you.
Well, I mean, I knew what it was. However, I wasn't sure whether his number was 50 or 56.
50.
And I also had a hard time with spelling Ninkovich.
His number is 50.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I got a great picture of me in my old jersey number from high school and college.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in a chair with my dog with Ninkovich's number on, because I'll tell you what, that dog can clean me out any time he wants.
Nice.
And I think Rob Ninkovich is going to be great.
Well, he certainly had a good game. You have to say that he came up with the big play. We've been screaming, I think, one of our nitpicks though throughout the whole year is trying to come up with someone on the defensive side of the ball that can make a play. We need playmakers over there. Ninkovich made the play that we needed to have to win the game.
Now, wait a minute, John. He made plays last year.
Right, that's last year, okay? That has nothing to do with this year.
And I've been impressed with him this year.
Okay.
However, I mean, he doesn't get much recognition. I think he is going to be a great. The other thing I got to say, it was wonderful to see Gronkowski getting his two touchdowns. And I don't know if you're of my ilk, but do you remember a horse called Secretariat?
Yes, I do.
Well, Secretariat was this big, dumb, goofy thoroughbred that everybody said was too big to run, too slow, kind of like to get the crowd's attention, and boy, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the third leg, I think it was 72 or 73, in the aqueduct.
Right.
That far behind, and he took off, put in those turbos.
So your analogy, though, is to compare him to
Yeah, the Secretariat.
Okay.
I think that those two guys, big, goofy, and you give them their head, and they're going to kind of jog along for a bit, but then they are going to outrun everybody and beat them.
Okay.
And Gronk kind of reminds me of this big, dumb, goofy horse that used to run, I don't know how many lengths behind, and it was Aqueduct. He won by something like 31 lengths.
Now that would have been Belmont.
Well, the one in New York.
Belmont.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think the raceway may be Aqueduct. But he is that same kind of, hey, I'll do it on my terms.
Mm-hmm.
And they do.
Right.
And I'll tell you, watching him on, you know, what was a nightmare there for a while that turned into a nice dream on Sunday. You know, I'm...
All right,
you
know, so we've established then what you like. What did you not like? What are your nitpicks then with Sunday?
Well, I was fourth quarter going, oh, no, it's happening again. But you know what? A win is a win is a win. And I'm not going to look down or look back on it. If a win, I'll take it.
Okay. Well, Ken obviously has very little to complain about, which is probably a good thing, I suppose. No sense in looking at things unless you got your rose-colored glasses on, which is fine. That's perfectly fine. Let's go to Olivier in Virginia. Olivier, you're in the playbook. Olivier, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks. I will take over Ken, and I will nitpick.
Okay.
I will nitpick until I'm blue in the face.
Okay. Go for it.
I feel that this victory feels like a loss. And, you know, I don't know why we decided to get, you know, Brandon Lloyd. I mean, this guy is consistently inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
He is capable of the most incredible perfect snapshot catches, and he is capable of what number 85 used to do consistently last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, you know, why is it? Is it a lack of talent, or is it, has he been just brought into the Patriots to be the Cirque de Brandon? You know, so he does incredible catches, but is incapable of catching another ball when it matters. Or he's never been able to be in a team where you know how to win, and if we need to do your job to be able to win. I'm starting to question whether all of Josh's decision to bring certain people that he knew and then he had, you know, familiarity with are actually working in our system, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is, what's up with that, you know, on the press conference you always say, well, you know, we need to play for 60 minutes. Well, what is the game for? 59? No, I mean, those guys are professionals. We always talk about, you know, I love these players because they have a high football IQ.
Right.
What's missing? The I from the Q from the I.
Okay.
Someone's going to tell me, of course you got to play for 60 minutes. This is the NFL.
Okay. It's the first time I've ever heard a talk like that, but that's pretty good, actually. I like it.
Well, so, you know, this is my nitpick. I'm like, I'm concerned. I have officially pushed the panic button. And, you know, of course.
Wow.
You know,
really?
We can go. We can only go up from here. You know, I'm
right,
a diehard Patriots fan and so forth, but I think, you know, it's time for us to wake up.
Well, why have you pushed the panic button? Because we saw what this team really is no different from last year.
That's true.
In fact, you could arguably say that this team may have potentially a better offense than the one that resided here a year ago. And certainly the defense is not any worse off, because statistically it's certainly better, even though, you know, nobody likes the secondary at all. So why can't you just line up like you did last year, outscore people, and still win what largely is a weaker AFC? Why can't you just do here what you did last year?
I think way too many existentialist questions about who we are, what we should do. Let's outsmart ourselves. We think so much sometimes, I believe, that, you know, we fall.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And I think that's part of the reason why we've seen the Patriots, even though they've got Hernandez back healthy, I think they realize, I just don't think this is who we are yet. And so I think we need to put that aside for a while. I think we need to play to who we are, because we still have Wes Walker. Now, things may change next year when they don't have him. But right now, when they do have him, this is the best way that they can beat people.
I agree.
The problem is that there's still, okay, here you go. How about one for you? There's a little je ne sais quoi. There's a little something going on with this team on offense.
Well, je ne sais quoi. I know what's going on. Just say.
Okay.
We can't get it.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you can't. And that's just it. And so we're trying to figure out what that just say is. We don't know. We don't know. This team is shooting itself in the foot, and this team cannot hold a lead, and this team allows teams to get back into games. They're not putting their foot on the jugular of the other team. And how does this happen? Part of it is because this team is still immature. And I don't mean that, you know, they're babies. What I mean is they just are not seasoned enough to where they get what they need to do. And the only way you get the seasoning is by going through the oven.
You know, I believe that in the secondary. I believe that to a certain extent with the defense, with the two first draft picks that we got that actually are panning out pretty well. I don't believe that in the offense.
Though. Okay. Well, you're right. You're right. In the offense, there's really, and my only explanation for the offense having the problems that it's had is we have a continued imbalance, whatever you want to call it. We have some problems in the offensive front. And we have a problem enough where Tom Brady gets still a little bit shaky at times.
Yeah.
Sometimes we come off the ball and look great. And other times, you know, we can't block to save our lives. So
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I mean, last year we had obviously a much better offensive line, granted. And Tom behaved in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's not the same, so I'm sure he's scared. I'm sure he's concerned and so forth. But then we have a new offensive coordinator. And I don't know Josh from Adam, so... You know, what am I going to say? You know, I give him the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, he left in the heydays of our offensive capabilities. He did his own stint somewhere that was successful, not successful, whatever it is. Then he comes back. I almost feel like he's trying to reinvent the playbook and try to put a stamp on this offense and that strategy. And I feel like it's going to take a wasted year for him to feel comfortable with the new things he's coming back to
at
the detriment of the season. And that really, if it's the case, it really bothers me and it concerns me. I don't know if it is the case, though.
Well, you know what? I think you're onto something. I think Josh realizes that, you know, he's got a lot of the same toys. In fact, he's got some new ones that he didn't have when he was last here in 07. I think Josh is pressing a little bit because he's trying to get back, you know, in good stead with the football community because he failed as a head coach at Denver. And I think Josh is also caught in between this metamorphosis, as I suggested earlier, of a Patriots organization that's trying. Yeah, they're trying to create something different for a new age. They're trying to be trendsetters. So I give them the benefit of the doubt, and I give them credit for trying to do something differently and trying to stay ahead of the curve. The problem is that your personnel, your personnel doesn't quite catch up to that curve yet.
Yeah.
And so you need to use what you have in the shop. And I think that's why we've seen Hernandez out there the last couple of weeks, but still an emphasis in trying to find 83 out on the field.
Yes, no, I agree. Anyways, I'm happy that, you know, we won. Believe me, it was an ugly victory, but at the end of the day, it was just like, you know, any other game of the Super Bowl. One or two plays made the difference, and I'm glad the guys stepped up and made it, and hopefully that's going to go a long way for them to, you know, solidify their, you know, their identity and the team cohesion and all that stuff. But you know, at what point, you know, we say we are a 6-0 team with the difference that, you know, 4 points is the difference of 6-0 and 4-3, or 7-0 and 4-3.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is not good enough. When you only have the statistics to protect yourself, there is a major issue.
Well,
and then
the issue
says, hey, you know, you Patriots fan are really, you know, you're spoiled because you expect perfection and so forth. No, not necessarily. I don't think we are spoiled. You know, we expect for these guys to come up and play 60 minutes. And if they get beat by a better team, so be it. But what's unacceptable is for us to play against the opponent and play against ourselves and having to win those inutile battles between ourselves. It's
yeah.
not worth it for us to have to shoot ourselves always in the foot. That's
well,
what's frustrating.
That is frustrating. And I obviously that has to be the number one nitpick overall is this team's inability to hold a lead because they are able to get out two leads and then they allow teams to come back on them. And so if you're the Patriots, you have to do a little, you know, introspective look here. All right, why is this happening and how is it happening? What are we doing differently? How are we changing our play calls? And are we getting too conservative? And my answer to that would probably be, well, yeah, I think you are. I think you need to, regardless of what the scoreboard is, regardless of the field position, regardless of anything else, I think you need to treat it like it's 0-0. I hear basketball coaches say this all the time. We're not concerned with a 12-point lead at halftime. We're playing like it's 0-0. We're not even going to look at the clock. We're not going to look at the scoreboard. We're going to go out there and win the quarter. And I really believe that's the kind of attitude that can go a long way toward correcting some of the problems that we see out there. These guys are too ensconced in the big picture right now, both fundamentally and theoretically, both.
You know what, John? You can look at the big picture, but if you don't look at the day-to-day small picture, there ain't going to be a big picture.
That's right, and I think that's what they're losing sight of. They're caught with trying to be competitive in another 5 years, which is all fine and good, and we hope that they are, but I want to win now. It's carpe diem, brother. You got to do it
Hallelujah.
Now. You got to do it now. This is the time to win, especially now that the AFC is clearly watered down to the point where the NFC is a better overall conference from top to bottom. So if there's ever a time, if there's ever a time for the Patriots to be down, this is the time because they can still win this league. And then it's just, and then it's just one game, baby. Then it's just one game. And I like their chances in one game against the Niners. I like their chances in one game against the Giants. Whoever they want to throw in there, I'll take my chances with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, but the truth is that the path to the AFC Championship will go through Houston.
It looks like it now. They sure put a whooping on Baltimore, didn't they?
Yeah, but Baltimore is like, you know, hurt from all types of dimensions, and it's going to be difficult.
Well, now this season. See, Baltimore's starting to go through on defense what we were afraid the Patriots are going through, and so the Patriots decided a couple of years ago to start. You know, we got to skew younger, and so they're doing it.
Yeah, so and my question is, can we, you know, it would have been great for, obviously, Houston to come in Foxborough with the snow, the wind, and the cold. Now we're going to be going into an Indy-like environment where it's perfect conditions and so forth. And, you know, I don't know who will be able to, but again, it's early in the season. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, are you happy with the progress made by the Dennards of the world, the Rosai Dallings?
I said last week, Olivier, that I felt like, you know, if this is all they had, then they should put Alphonso Dennard out there and just let him go. Because, first of all, he's a seventh-round pick, all right? He may be a young man who had, you know, first, second, or third-round talent, but he's a seventh-round pick because of the off-field issues at Nebraska from a year ago. So let's see what the guy's got, because what are you really losing here? You're not losing anything if he fails. So
I agree, and I think he's done pretty good.
He's done okay. I really, you know, for a rookie, I don't really have any problems here. He's not Devin McCourty rookie-like, but then again, Devin McCourty was a first-round draft pick. So,
oh, my God, what a disaster Devin has been.
Well, but you know what, though? I thought McCourty, save for the fumble and special teams, he did have a 104-yard kick return.
Yeah, that's great.
What we did see is, frankly, I think he's better suited to play safety in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think he's better suited to play there. So what? Put him back there. You know, Patrick Chung gets healthy. Great. Put McCourty and Chung there, and let's let Dennard and Arrington go at corner. That might be your best secondary.
I agree. Well, is Rosa Dalling hurt?
No, he just sucks.
Same thing, right? I heard that he has a hamstring injury.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what they call that? I'm sorry. I mean, I shouldn't be that flip because he is a professional football player. But those that have listened to this program the last couple of years thought that the pick of Rosai Dowling by this team was ridiculous. I thought that. I've said it from day one. There's no way that here's a young man who couldn't even get off the bench at Virginia because he was hurt all the time.
Yeah.
Forget talent. Talent means nothing if you can't stay healthy. Good players, really good players, know how to play. And they are out there on the field playing through hurt.
Yes, I agree.
And I don't think he's one of those.
I was hoping that Rodney Harrison would have an older son in college that is about to graduate and go to the draft.
Yeah, well, we need that. Frankly, we'd be better off with Rodney out there right now. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. Anyways.
But, yeah, it
John,
is what
I
it is, right?
Good time as usual.
Thanks, Olivier.
And I wish you a great day. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, sir. You got it. Olivier in Virginia. Let's stay on the phones here. Melvin in Tennessee up next. Melvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, Melvin.
Well, I guess we kind of elaborated on a lot of it, but like I said, I'm not hitting the panic button. I think my finger would have been on it if we would have lost, but still the level of disappointment and concern kind of for this team is kind of down. I kind of still have hope because really the Patriots have gotten off fast for a long time, starting seasons off fast and kind of finishing slow. So really everybody's going to really evaluate this team on how they finish. So as long as they pick it up, I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But for
I think we just lost Melvin. Oh, Melvin's line just dropped. He'll be calling back in. So Kevin, be aware of that when he calls back in. Until we get him, let's go to Eldridge in North Carolina. Eldridge, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, buddy. What's happening?
Love your show, too, but I disagree with you by keeping McCourty at safety.
Okay.
Because if two good reasons. Last Sunday, when they ran that bunch and they broke off and he stayed back, if Stephen Hill caught that pass, touchdown. And then the other time, when he's supposed to cover, I think that's Curry, number 11,
mm-hmm.
he didn't do it. No, he's not good at nothing but returning kicks. To me, McCourty, first year he was good because I think Merriweather helped him out a lot during his rookie team, rookie tender. But after that, he just fishing. And the whole secondary, I don't know, man.
What would you do with McCourty then? You going to put him back at corner?
Either way it goes, liability.
Well, you got to use him because he's one of the few healthy guys you got back there. All I'm trying to do is take advantage of his athleticism, and he seemed to me to be able to come cover over the top, you know, and help the cornerback out in a couple of plays. He seemed to do that okay, but frankly, you're right about Jeremy Curley. You're certainly right about Dustin Keller and Stephen Hill and some of the others. There's no way that those guys should have been as open as they were. Overall, you'd have to grade, you know, the secondary certainly with a D, and that may be pushing it.
Well, you're right. They're just pushing it because, like I said, if that receiving crew was like who are we going to face when we played Houston Texans?
Yeah.
We're in trouble.
Well, we don't. Hey, let's. Yeah, you that's know, that's still quite.
I know it's fucking down, but I'm just using it as a point, a point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said earlier on the other show, I think they need to take the whole secondary and the coach down Deion Sanders in Texas and go through the class, you know, because they need help. I ain't never seen a secondary stand flat footed while receivers coming off full blast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with the Patriots defense, they didn't start doing at least until recently this year and last year, at least the year before that. Couple years before they was backing up. They're not, and they're getting burnt. You know, I understand we got rookie safeties, but I would put Wilson back there and let him go for it. You know, like I said, he's a rookie. He's pretty athletic. He's pretty good, you know. He got to learn on the fly anyway. You know, but corners, Arrington, he get burnt. You know, he get burnt. And I think it all comes down to Bill evaluating talent. I think he's losing his touch as being the genius that they all pointed out.
Well, all right, that's fine, and you're certainly entitled to that opinion. I'm sure there are many that share that opinion with you. But how is that going to help this football team win a game next week? And the problem is it's not. So we realize that okay, Arrington may stink, and McCourty may stink, and Rashad Dowling may stink. But hey, these are the guys they have. So you still got to figure out a way to put some players out there on the field.
Well, you know what? If you look at it, just even the company they brought it up Sunday, when they playing press and running with the receivers, they cover a little bit better. But when they're in zone, they lost. When they put them in zone, they lost.
Well, then I think that was one of the reasons, though, Eldridge, why you saw them play more man coverage this last week. The problem with that is that in man coverage, you're going to have a tendency to give up some bigger plays. You're going to have a tendency to give up yardage and catches. But
even in zone too. So.
All right, but what happened in zone? What happened in zone against the Seahawks? They gave up bombs, right? Did they give up any bombs this week?
No, they
were mostly in man. So this is why I think you might see these younger, faster kids, and by that I mean guy like Dennard, you might see him continue to play a little bit more press man coverage so these guys don't give up, in theory anyway, in theory, it may not be in practicality, but in theory, so they don't give up the big play.
Yeah, but I think they need to go back basics some kind of way. I know it's a little late in season. But the coaching, even Belichick got to see this. Man, we standing still. You know, they're running right by us. It's something we ain't doing right as we coaching.
Well, that's part of Ross Idaling's problem. You know, that's part of his problem. Which is, I mean, he's straight up, dude. I mean, he's a tall kid, but you know, he looks huge back there compared to. He looks like he's 6'8" back there because he's standing straight up. So there's just, you know, I'm sure Eldridge that's stuff that's worked on, but you know.
Can't feel in the game,
Dan. No, you can't. And so there's a disconnect between, you know, the practical nature of what's going on in practice and what is actually happening, you know, when it comes time to hit, you know, playing game speed. There's just a disconnect that has not hooked on yet. And for some of the younger guys, and again, I'm going to go back to the youth thing, it's not an excuse. It is not, let me repeat, it is not an excuse. But it can be, could be, a reason for the inconsistencies that we see on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, but, okay, speaking of the other side of the ball, you know, you asked a question last week, you think Brady lost his magic, and no, the receivers lost their touch or they magic.
Okay.
Because he's putting the ball right with, like, Lord, for example. That's, if Lord had caught those two passes, those two touchdowns, it wouldn't be no 29-26 win. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have been that. And for him to try to go deep with Welter, that's showing right there they're missing that big player capability. And you said Hernandez, I think Hernandez still hurt. And so is Gronk a little bit. Until them guys get healthy, offense might pick up a little bit. And I don't blame Tom for chucking and ducking when everybody gets on that line, because that line, sometimes it's suspect, sometimes they ain't.
Well, they didn't have Mankins this week. They lost Dan Connolly this week with an illness. So they had two of their starters that were not in there. So it was a makeshift line again this week. And so for them to come through the way they did and be as good as they were, frankly, that's good.
Okay. Let me ask you one more question, John.
Okay.
Just do with Bill Belichick. I love Bill, one of my coaches, just like I love Brady. Brady I trust. But over the years, don't you think his prospect of players done dropped off from what he had when he first got here?
Well, we
got a pass rusher. We had some cornerbacks. We got linebackers.
Well, I would say yes and no. I would say they've done a pretty good job with linebacker. I'd say they've done a pretty good job at tackle and certainly finding some gems and guys like Kyle Love, for instance. I think they've done a really good job in offensive linemen, finding, guys that can play, multiple positions.
Offense.
Huh?
That big playmaker that you need on offense and defense. You know what? Like I said,
but that's not their offensive philosophy. So they're not going to go out and look for a big time playmaker. They're not going to go look for that because they don't believe in that. That's not something they coach. That's not something they want to try to go after. That doesn't mean they wouldn't go draft somebody if they, lucked into, say, the second or third pick in the draft, but that's not what they're looking for. So where I do think they have failed clearly is in their evaluation of defensive backs. And we've said that here over the last several weeks. We've said that they have had a problem in evaluating. They feel like, that's not a position on the field that is a value position where you have to go spend a high draft pick, that you can find guys that are just as capable in playing the position, if not more so, later in the rounds, and it doesn't cost you as much money.
Yeah, but sometimes you might have to do that in the secondary.
Well, I think we're learning that.
Like example, I'll give you one good example. Dennis is a good back. Denoris Jenkins is a better back. And we're going to find out Sunday.
Okay.
He's a better back.
Yeah.
And he had problems off the field, too. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I would have got Jenkins before I got Dennis.
Sure. Sure.
I would have picked.
All right. Well, this has got to be something Eldridge that's revisited. I mean, but here's the problem. We still got 9 games left to play in this year. So this is what we got. And unless, we go through a bunch of injuries, and even if we do, all you're going to be able to do is go to street free agents. And how's that going to make you better? And how's that going to help you for next year? You really think somebody who's on the street right now in week 8 is going to be good enough to stick around and be a part of next year's team? No.
Well, I don't know who out there in free agents, to be honest with you, corner-wise.
Well,
I don't know.
Again, that can change, and we're so far away from it, I really don't even want to get into that discussion. I really don't, because that's for another place at another time. Right now, you got to worry about this team, where it is at 4-3 after 7 weeks, and you're playing the Rams in London this Sunday. That should be the immediate future. We shouldn't even be thinking about division titles or AFC East leads or Super Bowls or anything else.
Shouldn't. No, not at all. I agree with that. Because the way they've been playing lately, it makes you wonder.
Right. I agree.
It makes you wonder.
I agree.
And I don't know if it's the coach. Well, I think a little bit of both, coaching and the playing.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, though, some of those guys, if they made some catches, caught some balls, or made some plays, we wouldn't be 4-3. We'd probably be 5-1.
Well, that's kind of where I thought this team would be. I thought this team would be 6-1 right now.
Me too. I thought only loss would probably be Baltimore.
So did I. That's exactly what I thought of. But see, here's the problem. We have these expectations, and if the team doesn't meet our own personal expectations, it's a disappointment. So you have to try to figure into the equation all the other periphery. Like, for instance, like we've talked about, how this team is still immature, how this team is still trying to, develop itself for the long haul to stay competitive for not just this year, but for the next few years. And that's all fine and good, but you got to at some point in time stand up and say, okay, now's the time to win. And you're going to run out of these opportunities over the next couple of years.
Yeah, you are. One more question, and I'll let you go. I know we got Marquise Coles from the Jets, but I ain't never seen him on the field. Is he hurt or something, or is he just ain't making the roster?
Special teams.
But he's just special teams.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not a corner.
He's not figuring back. I think he can. Well, he can play, but he's not figuring into that equation yet. And if he's not figuring into that equation yet, what does that tell you, Eldridge?
we in trouble.
No, it just tells you that he's not dependable enough to be back there. But but he could very well be if injuries continue to go, you know, to be a problem. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you, John. You have a good day, sir.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. You too. All right. Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. What are you doing appearing on the EEI whiner line again? What's your problem? What do you got to whine about? You got nothing to whine about. Good Lord.
I'm a professional whiner. You know that.
You're a professional whiner. Yeah, you perfect your trade here on inside Patriots Playbook.
We get
no love from you when you're whining about something, you know, to those chuckleheads who are spending all day today, by the way, talking baseball since the Red Sox hired a new manager. Big whoop.
Well, you know, the best part about this show is I get to whine longer. You know, when you call the whiner line, you have to kind of keep it short.
Well, that's true.
And here, I can just whine.
You can whine away.
Hang up on me.
Well,
at some point.
Tuesday is.
Probably get sick of hearing it.
No, not necessarily. We only hang up when you know you've made your point, and then you start to beat the dead horse again.
Listen, here's the thing. I'm going to try to be a little Miss Sunshine here today.
Oh, come on. You got to have some nitpicks first. You're killing me.
Well,
all is well stuff is killing me today.
I know. Listen, the first nitpick goes to Jim Nantz for screwing up the end of the game.
Oh, that was beauty, wasn't it?
Well, that was classic.
Kevin, did you ever find that? Did you ever find it? Do you have it? All right, hang on just a second. For those that didn't hear this, let me set it up. If you did not hear this, I assume if you were watching the CBS broadcast, then you probably heard it or whatever. But
something happened.
Yeah,
I don't know if somebody slipped him some OxyContin.
I don't know what happened, but what this shows, what this, what, God, slipped him what?
Huh?
What did he slip him?
Somebody put something in his Diet Coke.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
At any rate,
this was the final seconds of the game in overtime on Sunday. Listen in.
All right.
Which we expect it will. It's going to be a stunner. Biggest underdog of the day in the league. Here comes Triplett.
After review, the ruling on the field is confirmed. It is a fumble and a clear recovery by New England. The game is over.
And the New York Jets stand alone in first place now. New England Patriots.
Yeah.
Rewind the tape, Jim Nantz.
Yeah,
you know.
Well,
rewind.
First of all, let me explain. This happens to the best of them, and Jim is very, very good at what he does.
I understand. I'm just playing. Really.
He got it in his head that the Jets were, you know, getting ready to go for the upset, and then after Ninkovich came up and Cunningham came up with a strip sack, and Ninkovich recovered the ball, he still had it in his brain that the Jets are going to win this game. And sometimes it just happens. It's happened to the best of us. It's also happened to the worst of us.
It almost makes you think, John Rook, that he had like an end-of-game script for a Patriots win and an end-of-game script for a Jets win already sketched out.
That's
like he grabbed the wrong one.
That's possible. That's possible. But I would tell you that any good broadcaster that does that is begging for trouble. You can't script that stuff.
You gotta be natural with it.
Yes, precisely.
See, otherwise it sounds phony.
There's no question, Al. There's just, what? I mean, you know, you got to go with the moment, and you know, and sometimes you know, you got to remember four letters. KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Well, I've never done any professional commercial broadcasting. I was in the armed forces as a broadcaster, and I did a few of our sporting events.
Well, you sound like it because you got the pipes for it.
Well, thank you. It's all natural. I'm not a smoker. You know, I didn't do anything I don't try to enhance anything or reach for anything. This is just kind of how it comes out. But anyway, you know, back to the Patriots. You know, this was a huge win because the New York Jets, for all their trials and tribulations and injuries and everything else, were sitting there at 2-0 in this division. If they had won that game Sunday, they're 3-0. All of a sudden, they're looking pretty good. Not just, you know, like this Sunday, but for future Sundays. And so we had to knock them off to get them down to 2-1 in the division. Now we're 2-0 in the division and looking a lot better, of course, with the one-game lead. Mm-hmm. As far as our defensive backs go, I understand, and I'm right there with everybody. It's almost mind-boggling how it seems like we're either hugging somebody or there's somebody wide open. You know, we just can't seem to get that happy medium of just solid coverage. We just either leave people, they're running around free, or we're committing a penalty, you know?
Yep.
And it just, I tell you this, I watched the 1 o'clock game. I've got the Sunday ticket package. So the 1 o'clock game that I chose to watch, because it's another divisional opponent, was the Bills playing the Titans at home and at Buffalo. And, I mean, you want to talk about a track meet. Nobody was stopping anybody. I mean, it was just back and forth, up and down. And, you know, I'm just wondering if maybe the NFL has bitten off more than it can chew as far as, and maybe things will balance out. I think it eventually will. But at least for right now, it just seems like the offenses have all the advantages. You know, every time you need a third down penalty on the defense to extend a drive, it seems like you get it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a lot more defensive holdings, it seems like now, than there is offensive holdings. And it just, I'm not saying that the things are rigged or the deck is stacked intentionally, but it just seems like that it's a lot tougher to play defense for a lot of teams,
yeah,
not just the Patriots.
No, the rules have clearly, you know, developed a different interpretation where offenses are favored. I mean, that's right. Certainly been, that's been, how about this, you know, last week, and we realized this happened Friday, maybe Saturday. I don't know if you saw it, if you were reading, there was a couple of wire reports that were out there that the Jets, and particularly Rex Ryan, had visits with NFL officials in New York and also game officials to clue the officials in on what they perceive as an illegal advantage by the Patriots offense for not allowing substitutions for the other team to come in. If the Patriots are allowed to substitute, the defense should be allowed to substitute. And that is the rule. If you make a substitution, you're supposed to allow the defense to have that time. But the Patriots have brought it to an art where it's so quick and so rapid fire, they make it difficult for a team to recognize the adjustment.
Okay.
And still get your players in. And so what the Jets were saying is that that's borderline illegal. And that's what Calvin Pace said last week. He went on record as saying, well, what the Patriots are doing is borderline illegal. And of course, we all got up in arms over that. But in effect, what we understand that he's trying to say is that he was probably being clued into what, you know, Rex Ryan and the coaching staff was telling them before the game that, you know, we're going to call the NFL out on this and we're going to tell them, look, we're not telling the Patriots they can't run their offense. What we're saying here is that the officials must monitor the situation to the point where if the Patriots are making substitutions, then the Jets also need to be allowed to make a substitution. And it's incumbent upon the Jets to make that sub. Because if they don't make it in time before the ball is snapped, or if they put too many people on the field or too many men not on the field, that's their own fault. So really, it was much ado about nothing. But
to me, that's something that was a complaint for back when we had the replacement ref.
Well,
you know,
yes, in a sense.
I mean, are we saying that the good refs that we have back or? They don't know
they
that
wanted
rule,
me, no, all they wanted to it? Do, no, all the Jets wanted to do was just send a message.
Yeah, they're planting
That's
a seed.
All they did is they're planting a seed. In fact, they even got the Patriots thinking about it a little bit, because you noticed that the Patriots didn't stay exclusively with the no huddle. So, and even when they did, remember, defensively, the Patriots were caught short when the Jets scored their first, score. I think the Patriots were at only 10 men on the field.
Well,
so,
you know, at the end of this season, I would be curious. If somebody somewhere did a study, one of these cold, hard football facts like you have on Patriots.com or whoever does these stat geeks, I'll bet you this is a record at the end of this year. I'll make a bet right now. At the end of this year, it's going to be the fewest amount of punts in the history of pro football.
It might be.
This year.
Well, you should ask Kerry Byrne that question tomorrow when he's on, because I'm sure he'll have that number.
At least, you know, considering the current number of teams, and I mean, you'd have to, if you went back to when there were only 12 teams, maybe there'd be less.
Right.
But I mean, as far as, you know, with 32 teams,
in the modern day era, you're probably right.
Era,
yeah.
Yeah. Since 1970, whatever.
The rules
of the thinks is a good measurement. I'll bet you we have less punts this year because, like I say, nobody was stopping anybody in that Bills and Titans game. And you could just say, well, everybody sucks. But, I can't believe, they're NFL players, John.
The rules of the game have dictated.
Suck.
I know, Al, and they don't. The rules of the game have definitely favored offenses. You can't, and in fact, the Patriots, really, I have to admit, the Patriots are as big a factor in getting the rules of the game to change, maybe more than any other single team in the league. You'll recall back in 01, you're playing the greatest show on turf of the Super Bowl. What do the Patriots do to win the game? They jammed. They jammed
the
receivers. They smacked them in the mouth. And now the Colts, remember Bill Polian screamed bloody murder about that a few years ago, and the rule changed.
So
you can't really do that anymore. So right now, defensive backs, they're not horrible, but the problem is they can't adjust to the rules of the game that allow you or don't allow you to be able to be physical with the receivers anymore. You can't do it to the extent that you could do it a decade ago. You just can't.
You can't. And based upon the replays that I saw, and it's dangerous to just judge by a few replays, but occasionally they would show when there was a penalty or a catch by the Jets in the secondary, you'd have an angle of the Patriots secondary and kind of how the coverage is going. And it seemed like that we were kind of caught in no man's land. We wouldn't bump the guy and we wouldn't lay off the guy. We'd sort of lay off about 4 or 5 yards, let the guy get a few strides, and then sort of desperately try to grab him or bump him and get a penalty. In other words, it was like a bump, not a bump and run on the line of scrimmage. It's like we're bumping and running 5 or 6 yards downfield.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too late. It's outside the 5 yards, and then you get called. And I don't know. Maybe you don't know how people are being coached, this whole, they should turn their heads around thing. Maybe they're just not being coached that way.
Well, we've said that on this show.
Being coached to bump people at the line of scrimmage.
Al, we've said that on this show. So, they're not being coached that way.
Right. So, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but it's just that it may be. It's just something that can't be helped for now until the defensive coordinators around the league, including the Patriots, catch up with the rule book and the way the rules are being enforced.
Well,
until then, we just got to hang on and hope that guys continue to drop balls, Willis McGahee did and like the Hill kid did.
Yeah, Stephen Hill dropped one.
We just got to hope for breaks here and there
our
defense.
You got two huge breaks that allowed you to, some comfort in winning the Denver game and allowed you the opportunity to still win the Jets game. And I'm of the opinion that teams that are destined for greatness always find a way to get their share of breaks. Now, while the Patriots have lost 3 games by a grand total of 4 points, that may be part of the process of just evening out the karma. But they're still getting their share of breaks. It's up to the Patriots now to figure out a way to remain consistent enough on offense where they can continue to step on someone's throat when they get somebody down. Double-digit leads in the fourth quarter, you're not supposed to lose. That's their biggest problem right now as I see it.
I think you're right. That's really more of an offensive problem than it is a defensive problem.
Yes, it took us 65 minutes to get to the opening point. But we finally got to it, Al. The problem is not the defense.
You sound like you need to be on the whiner line, man.
Well, the problem... No.
What are you doing whining at me?
No, I don't do that stuff anymore. The problem here is the offense. It's not the defense. The defense is what it is. This offense has got to improve.
Before I hang up, I want to shout out, I want to give some love to Kyle Love. He doesn't get talked about enough, and you might have talked about him, and I just wasn't paying attention or something, forgive me. But I think he's having a hell of a year. And I think he's given us and given Vince Wilfork the dance partner there in the middle that he never got, evidently, out of Albert Haynesworth.
Right.
He's getting that, and we got those two big fat guys in the middle that are jamming up the middle. And nobody can run on us, really.
He's
that
funny
effectively.
Because he's fat.
Yeah, that's very
and,
true.
That frees up Spikes and Mayo to run around behind him unencumbered and make the kind of hits that they're making.
No question.
Spikes knocking Sean Green out of the game and a clean hit, not a cheap shot.
Right.
And, I guess Mayo's leading the team in tackles and that type of thing. And
right.
I think that's what we thought we were going to get
out
of Haynesworth last year.
Correct.
And it just didn't happen. We're getting it out of Kyle Love, and I want to give him a little recognition there.
Duly noted, Miguel. Duly noted.
All right, babe.
Thanks, man.
Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, you will. All right, so that's Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. And there's time for you as we jump into hour number two here inside Patriots Playbook on a Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots.com radio, web radio at Patriots.com. What are your nitpicks? What are your problems? And better yet, do you have a solution for fixing those problems, correcting those problems and mistakes? Web radio at Patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline is now open to you at 508-298-0398. John Dot Rook on Facebook at JRook0722. Twitter. Go!
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for a tremendous fall tire sale. And best of all, there are no forms to fill out, no rebates to wait for. Save an instant $70 when you buy four select Bridgestone tires now through October 31st. We'll take $70 off the invoice on the spot. Save on quality Bridgestone tires, such as the Dueler HL Alenza, Taranza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. There's a Bridgestone tire for every season here in New England, and now is the perfect time to buy during our fantastic sale. Remember, we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance, with over 100 ASE certified master technicians on staff, plus easy online appointments and free shuttle service. Check out the everyday low prices on Bridgestone tires and our incredible Bridgestone tire offer. Make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. Sale ends October 31st. In-stock tires only. This is a Sullivan Tire promotion. See store for details.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
I
love.
Love.
Love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice. And football. And baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012 Bank of America Corporation.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too. Sucky, sucky, sucky. It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
And we're into the second hour of our program here on Nitpick Tuesday. You can join in with your picking of the nits. Web radio at Patriots.com. 508-298-0398. The Ace Ticket Hotline. John.Rook on Facebook, at JRook0722, Twitter. Lots of social media ways that you can get involved, and many of you are contributing. I wanted to let you know, however, that the St. Louis Rams have arrived. They have landed in London. They got into Heathrow Airport early this morning, and then just a few hours ago, they were on a field in Regent's Park outside of London, doing drills with local school kids. The Rams, as you're aware, are the home designated home team for the game this coming Sunday, which will be a 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff, our time, but it'll be 5 p.m. local time in London, so a night game there at Wembley Stadium. It was pretty cool. Been to London before myself. I've not been in Wembley. And I think there's a big difference there because I do appreciate British and really European soccer for that part, for that much, and understand the significance of the venue, especially in light of the fact that the Olympic Games, Summer Olympic Games, were held in London as well. So tremendous time for sports overseas. And I know that our UK Patriots are going to be out in force at the game on Sunday. In fact, those of you that are listening from the UK, or certainly in points over than the other side of the pond here, love to hear from you this week. Love to get your perspective. How is this game being played up in the European media, in the British media in particular? Is it, you know, a big deal, or is it just, the Yanks are here? I mean, because it's been done before. We know this. So I'm looking for some true feedback here from our UK Pats and our fans overseas. And we have many of you who do. If you don't listen to it live, because I understand the time difference here, then as you're listening to this on the podcast, send a note, send the email, or you can always hit me up on one of the social media spots, either Twitter or Facebook, because it'll always be there. And I'll get it personally, and then we can discuss it later. But did want to fill you in that the Rams are in the house in London. The Patriots are not scheduled to leave until Friday, actually late, what, Thursday night, I think it is, Kevin? Yeah, late Thursday night, going to fly overnight and get there Friday morning.
Yeah, they're taking a red eye. Getting there Friday, and as Fred was talking about on PFW, straight off the plane to press conferences.
Right, exactly, because, you know, they don't really have the off-field duties that the home team, the Rams, have.
He was bellyaching about it all day today, John.
Fred was?
Yeah, but he was going to be so tired.
He doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to go.
No, he wants to go. He just wishes it wasn't a red eye, I think, because I don't... He has a point, though.
Red eye's the only way to go, brother.
I can't sleep on planes.
I can't either.
So I think people are going to have trouble trying to get rest on the way over there.
Maybe, but you know what, though? Rest is for when you're dead, okay? Rest is for when you're taking the great and dirt nap. I mean, come on. I want to live. I want to do stuff. You know, I want to go see things. This would be a great trip to go on, and I'm glad the Patriots are a part of it. I just wish that we were the home team, and then maybe I get to do the public address there. That would be very cool, so that you called a game at Wembley. Aren't too many people get a chance to do that. So, anywho, wanted to give you the update on the Rams' arrival. All right, let's get to some of the Facebook posts and some of the emails that we have for you at webradio@patriots.com. GB in Quincy writes, John, love the playbook. Regrettably, I can rarely listen live, but as I'm sure the talk today will center around the defensive backfield, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on all of the people we cut during the roster selection process. We must have had some better options from a depth perspective. GB, no. I mean, no. I don't really think so. I think we all realize that some of the players we thought might be good, but listen, if you can't get it done in training camp, what makes you think you're going to be able to get it done during the regular season? Now, if it were really that close, then they'd find a way to maneuver and roster positions to the point where, oh, here's a guy we could keep around for a while and keep him on the practice squad and yada yada. And I think that's actually how Alphonso Dennard started. So Dennard was actually one of those guys that, you know, started out that, and now he's worked himself into playing quite a bit, if not starting. Part of that is because he's earned it. Another part of that is because of the injuries. So better options? No, I can't say that there were. He also says, could the fourth quarter issues be a conditioning issue? Are we just soft and substituting or rotating poorly? I fail to see that anything is a conditioning issue, because the National Football League, as I'm sure you're aware, GB, is a year-round sport now. This is not like, you know, guys back in the 60s who had to use training camp to get into shape because, you know, they were trying to, you know, they were, you know, fat and out of shape from, you know, their insurance sales jobs in the offseason. It's a full-time job, as you well know. I just seeing these guys go through what they go through, then why aren't other teams having the same problems if it's a conditioning issue? Are we seeing other teams with problems that they're fading late in games? That, you know, if we can say that, then that might be an issue based on, you know, the new collective bargaining agreement, which says you can only get into pads every so often and you know, what have you. I'm not sure that that's an issue. Duke says, this is a trade one. Okay, we'll save that for the next show. Here we go. Josh from Seaville, Charlottesville, Virginia. It was a great birthday for me when the Pats got the W. My prediction was pretty close at 30-27, but still 1 point off. My nitpick this week is still the secondary. I did say that. I didn't care about the sexiness of the win, and I didn't. But when we get to the 49ers and the Texans, this is going to be a much more serious issue. Yeah. Sanchez came out and played well, but I feel as though he got away with a few. Patriots still can't seem to buckle down and finish games. The issue will be a problem should the 49ers or Texans be able to hold us defensively and create a close game. We need to get better in the backfield if we want to win those two. I think you're dead on. I think you're dead on. Yeah, you got to have some improvement in the backfield. But here's just a thought, Josh, and for anybody else who's thinking the same thing here. But let's say, for instance, you know, that the 49ers do come out or the Texans do come out and hit us in the mouth and it's a close game for a while. Maybe, just maybe, the fact that it's a close game keeps the Patriots' offense in the sideline and everybody concerned on edge to the point where everybody stays focused better. Sometimes I think with leads, and especially, as I've said, with immature teams, leads cause you to take time away from focusing on the task at hand. In other words, you lose the focus. It's kind of like the little leaguer out there in left field who's picking the dandelions, you know? We got a baseball game going on here. We got a football game going on here. If you're in a tight game and the emotions are high, I think you stand a better chance of being in the game the whole way. So that doesn't really bother me as much as it maybe bothers you, Josh, or anybody else that thinks those ways. Because I think, you know, if this team is indeed got some maturity issues, and I think it does, then I think being in a tight game is going to be good for this team. It's all going to be, it's winning those two games in December is going to be about making plays. You got to make more plays than the other guys. The other guys are going to have the capability of making more plays than, say, oh, I don't know, the Jets did Sunday, or maybe even the Rams do this Sunday. 49ers and Texans are probably at the top of the list in terms of, top teams in the NFL right now. They're up there. But I don't think that should scare the Patriots. I think the Patriots certainly have enough on offense to be able to play with those guys. And who knows? I mean, we're still talking about something that's, 2 months away. We don't know what will happen with the defense or what will happen with our personnel on defense between now and then. That's like almost another season, another lifetime away. Joe in Michigan writes, John, well, that game was closer than I had hoped. I predicted a thumping from the Patriots. Ended up going into OT. Ugly win, but I'll take it. Anyway, do you see McCourty playing more safety going forward? Dennard held up pretty good at the corner spot. McCourty didn't get beat back at safety like he does at corner. And he says also, why did Bill let McCourty return another kick after he fumbled? It's different treatment than Ridley gets. Is it just because there isn't another option? All right, let's tackle the first one first. Do I think he'll play more safety going forward? I think that the Patriots will have, I don't think they're going to force him into safety, but if they continue to have injury problems, then I think that they're more comfortable in allowing McCourty to slide over and play, because we do know that the Patriots do value versatility in their defensive backfield and in their offensive line more than anything else. So will he stay back there when Patrick Chung gets healthy or Steve Gregory gets healthy? No, probably not. Because then what you do is you go back to your natural spot, in theory at least, and you make it better by virtue of the depth, even though you can only put two corners on the field at any given time. But what I'm saying is, though, is that they could end up maybe giving those other guys a rest. They could give those other guys a switch out. Maybe they could throw a little curveball toward the opposition. Who knows? Put him in there with a nickel package or keep him in there. I mean, you have options. You have options, and that's always good to have when you're struggling to find anything good about the secondary. And why did he let McCourty return another kick after he fumbled? Well, probably a couple of reasons. Number one, he did return a kick for 104 yards in the same game. Did we forget that, Joe? I know he fumbled, and I know it was an egregious error, and I'm sure he's going to have to run until he probably throws up this week in practice because of it. I'm sure there'll be some punishment meted out. But he returned a kick 104 yards, and he gave the Patriots a play that they really needed, because we know that the offense struggled at times this year. Struggled at times this last week, I mean. So, he gave you a boost. We've been crying for playmakers on this team, and you get a play. You got to play. That's why he's out there. The playmakers have to play. That simple. Okay. Next, for Chad, a win is a win, period. Ugly or not, a win is a win. Most of the Falcons' wins come with the last 5 second, field goals. Texans got blown out last week, so were the 49ers. I refuse to nitpick on the secondary unit until enough people bring up the Texans' performance last week. The run defense is stout. They limit feature backs to under 50 rushing yards. Green had 54, by the way, and they turn the ball over. That's what this D is all about. Stuff the run, turn them over. Can't argue with that, Chad. That may be what their, moniker ends up becoming. We're going to stuff the run. We're going to turn you over. And they hadn't done a great job of turning you over, not as good as I thought they had done last year, but at least they're beginning to do that. And now we've seen the last couple of weeks guys that are trying to make plays. And we certainly saw that this past week. So we have guys that know that they need to step up and be playmakers. And the awareness of it is really half the battle won. Okay, nitpicks. Concentration and awareness on awareness. The defense did make plays. They turned the ball over, but the offense didn't capitalize. There were some miscommunications between Brady and his receivers, drops that should have been caught. Totally agree. The disadvantage of winning by blowouts 80% of the time for the last 2 years is that when you have a down game, you're immediately under the radar. But look around the league. Winning is hard. Winning on the road is tougher. You know, Brady said as much in the locker room afterwards. He said it again on Patriots Monday yesterday. Winning, first of all, in the NFL is hard, period. Winning on the road, tougher than that. I know they were home, but winning is just hard. And I said in the opening hour of the program, and I'll say it again here if you joined us late, we've got more games right now in the NFL decided by 8 points or less than I think we had the entire season a year ago, which means more games are being played close, which means to me there's just more ability out there. There's more parity than ever before. You can make that argument. And the preconceived notions of who's a good team and who's not just don't matter anymore. Everybody's got players. Everybody's got coaches. It's all about executing. And right now, on offense, the Patriots are not executing like they should. And I don't think it's so much because of what the opponents are doing. I think a lot of this is self-inflicted by the Patriots, and we got to figure out how to fix that problem. He says, I predict this team doesn't score under 30 for the next 9 games, and they go undefeated. Absolutely. He says, keep in mind one thing, Chad does. 2011 Giants were 9-7 and ended up being Super Bowl champs. That is a very good point for all of us to keep in mind, especially if the Giants end up winning in the NFC. But yes, no question. Howard from Connecticut, Stratford, Connecticut, says, John, you hit the nail on the head in my honest opinion. This is the youngest team BB has coached in his tenure here. They're experiencing growing pains of playing at this level. As an example, the starting secondary this past week were McCourty, Wilson, Dennard, Arrington. Two rookies and a fourth-year guy playing out of position. Then, of course, there's my first nitpick in that Matt Patricia or Bill or whoever's making the call doesn't blitz to help the secondary not to have to cover for an extended period of time. That's a good point. We talked about that, Howard, last week, that we thought maybe the way that you fix this problem is by throwing an occasional blitz in there to help the secondary out, right? Well, if you noticed, I noticed in the second half, they did try linebacker blitz. They sent Brandon Spikes, I know, once. I think they sent Ninkovich again on another when he was not lined up at a defensive end. And I think the play at the end of the game, I believe, was an all-out blitz. And Ninkovich obviously connected. So I believe that they're actually trying to incorporate the blitz. They did a little this last week. Let's hope that that trend continues, because that indeed will help the defense out and not make them have to hold their position and their coverage any longer than they have to. So when you know it's a passing down, throw the backer in there. Get him in there. Put it, you know, 5-on-4, you know, as far as the offensive line is concerned or what have you. And yeah, create the odd man matchup. I love Spikes as a blitzer. And Ninkovich obviously can do it because he plays defensive end half the time. So I think that's a good call. Second pick, nitpick, is with the position coach at the secondary and the defensive coordinator. Teach the players how to play aggressive at the line of scrimmage, and if not stop, at least delay, throw off the timing of the wideouts at the line of scrimmage instead of giving them a free release. Well, yes, but I think we saw what happens when you try to play aggressive with the guys. They got called for holding a couple of times. I know Dennard got called for it once, and I think Dowling got called for holding like 2 or 3 times. So they don't want their guys on the line of scrimmage, because the opposing receivers, the way that they coach it, it's just, I don't think they want that. That's why you see them give as much cushion as they do. I think that's a fundamental issue that you have to go back to basics on. I'm not sure that can be solved overnight either. Third nitpick is, again, with a secondary, teach the players to look to find the football. Well, we've explained how they coach it. Again, that's a fundamental way of coaching. I don't know if you're going to get changes on that or not. Again, that's going to have to be an off-season issue. Fourth nitpick, defense specifically, the defensive coordinator. I think we've got a theme going here. Spacing. When the players drop into zone coverage, the holes are not supposed to be that big. When the camera pans to an open wide receiver, I should at least see a Patriot defender somewhere near him. You're correct. Spacing is an issue, and that's a great pickup. And that's part of the reason why you saw more man coverage this last week, because they were having trouble holding spacing when they're playing cover two. Fifth nitpick is with the offensive play calling this time. Let me first say I love having Josh McDaniels back replacing Bill O'Brien. I never liked B.O.B.'s play calling. I do like how McDaniels uses the weapons he's been given and how he wants to establish a running game. I don't like when he gets too cute and calls plays that make no sense. Like 3rd and 16, and we have Welker running a fly. They needed 16 yards, not 60. I agree with that one. That was a stupid play call. That's correct. Howard, you and I are on the same page on the nitpicks today. And he's got one more, and a sixth nitpick, he says, is on McCourty kick returns. Yes, he ran one back. It was a thing of beauty. However, I think there has to be better returners than him. Slater, for one? Not to mention the secondary is depleted already. Why open him up to injury? Unless, of course, there's an ulterior motive at work here because of his stellar secondary play. He's being sarcastic. I can't agree with you on that one. I guess we'll have to disagree on that one, Howard. It's an interesting point. I think they felt like Devin McCourty was the best option. That's all I can tell you. I really believe strongly that they put the players in there they feel like they have the best option to succeed. And, well, 104 yards is all you really needed to have to convince me otherwise. I mean, that's guy went 104, okay? 104 yards, he scored a touchdown. And we want to make a change? Come on. Really? Chris in Seattle. My biggest nitpick is nothing we haven't all been talking about already. Closing out games that are well in hand. And though I certainly have my concerns about the defense, especially the secondary, there's no question all phases of the game have contributed to the implosions. In fact, this last week is a perfect specimen. All three phases contributed to the lead heading into the fourth quarter. All of them had scored, in fact. And then in the fourth quarter, all three phases of team play contributed nearly throwing it away. A fumble kick returned from a player who'd earlier scored a touchdown. A pitiful three and out from an offense that had moved up and down the field. Gaping holes in a secondary that, well, maybe weren't that great earlier in the game, but the defense as a whole kept the Jets' score at a completely manageable level. True. That's truly remarkable. The team played together for 60 minutes, but unfortunately the fourth quarter they played terribly together. I don't get it because they don't even look tired. They just look scared. They look like they know they're not going to score on offense, they're not going to stop them on defense, and just watch for the rest of us as things fall apart. Kudos to the team for the clutch play to force the overtime and get the win, but man, yeah. Chris, I have to sigh on that one because you've asked the question that I'm not sure any of us can really answer. They have not played well together in the fourth quarter for whatever reason. And I go back to not being in crunch time together and not, you know, being, in enough, enough of an NFL battle. They're not battle-tested enough to where they understand that the focus has to be there. As we've kind of talked about all along, that's the only explanation I can give you because really it's a head-scratcher. I mean, there's enough talent out there and enough guys who have been around for a long enough time to know that, you know, you got to step up and make plays. And we're seeing that from some of the veterans like Spikes and Ninkovich and McCourty. And, you know, even though McCourty's only been there for 4 years, but we're seeing those guys begin to make plays and hopefully the other guys begin to catch on is all I can tell you. What else we have? Okay. Sean says, John, I think Olivier nailed it. I don't think Josh is calling the right plays. I think sometimes you can see it in Tom's face. Watch next time they're talking to each other on the sidelines. Tom has that look like, are you kidding me? Yeah, there were a couple of plays, and we just talked about one, that third and 16, and they send Welker on a fly route. There are a couple of plays that make you scratch your head, and I'm sure that Josh feels like that's a gettable play if the pass is thrown well and the receiver runs the right route. But we don't need 60, as the emailer pointed out. We needed 16 on that play. And frankly, I'd just as soon give him, I'd set up a screen for Woodhead and let him try to pick it up. Guy runs so close to the ground, he's just damn near impossible to tackle. I think those are the kind of plays you need to be calling in those instances. Maybe that was a changeup because they felt like the Jets thought that was coming. All right, I'll buy that. But to go downfield like that, no. That's a low percentage play. I don't care if you're Joe Montana. It's a low percentage play. Brooklyn Matt says, John, Jets fans are hiding from me down in Brooklyn. Monday morning, I came out my front door in my red Patriots 32 Craig James throwback. Craig James? Pony! I scanned the block for any Jet fan green. I spied Jet fan Louie's wife out on her front stoop. I got my verbal insult locked and loaded. I opened my big mouth to let it fly, and she ran indoors before I could bust her on her loser Jet fan husband. She knew what was coming. Felt good to see her running for cover at the intimidating sight of a red throwback. How do you like them apples? Matt, that's awesome. Absolutely awesome. Love it. Bruce in Baltimore. John, I want to expand the nitpick beyond the common themes and bring up the subject of Belichick tinkering, particularly in the offense. We hear hints of it in different places. Bill pushes the scheme envelope in the first part of the season to see what his team is capable of. If the team executes, they look good early, but Bill is not afraid to take a few losses in the learning and training process. Yes, that's true. We've seen this. They've been close a lot, but they don't look practiced because they're not. It's a new scheme and player rotations each week, and the players don't really get to practice it much. Once we hit the bye week, Bill's going to focus his game plans on what he knows his people are capable of. The players will have worked more as a team on the various options, should look better when they execute in the second half of the season. I hope they all stay healthy. I think it'll be another exciting season with much to talk about. And it's an interesting point, Bruce. There has been some of that learning incorporated, I think, along the way. And that once we get by this week, hopefully with a W and you're 5-3 at your break, that you can decide officially, okay, this is who we are. As I've said before, you kind of know after halfway, about 8 weeks through the season anyway. So now that you kind of begin to understand who you are and what kind of team you're going to be, then you can game plan accordingly and try to play up more to your team's strengths and take less chance at doing something that's going to burn you. I think that's huge. All right, back to the phones. Melvin in Tennessee. Melvin, what happened to you?
Man, I have no idea. I was talking, and I guess my service cut off on me in the middle of these trees, I guess. But I think that's what happened.
I just want to know, Melvin, were you still talking to John for the last hour, and you didn't know you had lost connection? Just talking to yourself?
I was talking to him for about 5 minutes, and I said, John, you don't agree? I said, John. I looked at my phone.
So you finally came up for air, and there was no Rick.
It took a little while, but I didn't get a legend going on. I can't wait to see Melvin on replay. That's when we really
oh, Melvin, that's awesome.
I was watching. I was just going up and ran and everything. I was like, why is this guy ran in the middle of these trees with nobody else around him? I had to get off my chest. I had to get away from all this loud music so I can talk and get out of this frustration.
Oh, that is perfect.
Yeah. But.
All right. So try, if you can paraphrase then, tell me what you wanted me to agree with.
Yeah, well, I was just trying to discuss the fact that we had so many wide open receivers running across the field, I guess, Sunday. And that was just my frustration that I could understand, you know, getting beat on every now and then. And I can live with that because, you know, we can make some plays, but I was just concerned with wide open people running across the field. I don't know if it's, you know, that, you know, I think that's more of somebody coaching whoever designed up this game plan. I know nobody designed up the game plan for, you know, that tight end to be running up and down the field or heel on that drop pass. Wasn't nobody near him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just thinking, even if Curley beating Arrington on those corner routes, like I knew the Jets were going to throw towards the corner because they've done it the last couple of times we played them. That's a high percentage pass to them. It's either going to be caught by their people or it's an incomplete pass.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that even in the playoff game years ago, they want to throw towards the corner. They love it.
Yep.
So I'm just concerned about where really this team. I don't know if it's a defensive back coach issue or really what it is, but in this passing league now, you know, the team can only go so far because of course the Aaron Rodgers or Matt Ryan's of the world wouldn't miss those passes.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a horrible pass for the interception too. That was just terrible. He was somewhat open for a while.
Yeah.
He was open. So I just wanted you to just elaborate on. I'm pretty sure you've already talked about it by now, but where do you think this problem lies? Well, I was talking to myself obviously the last hour. But where do you think this problem lies in this secondary?
Well, honestly, I think there's not any one reason. I think a lot of fans are probably accurate in their assessment of not correctly evaluating the talent that you go out and you get. I think that's one. I think number two, that their coaching techniques of these players that are out there are probably not conducive to what they really need to be effective. Again, that's just a matter of opinion. But, you know, they're the ones that are paid to coach. I'm not. I've only seen the game, you know, as a professional for 35 years, so what do I know? But I'm just saying that my thought process is that I think, like a lot of you, that you have to at some point instruct your guys to turn around and make a play on the ball. You just have to. Now, they're trying to avoid that. They get receivers. They get their defensive backs to coach. They coach them up by getting them to watch receivers' hands and then begin to make the play when the receiver's hands go up when they move. That's kind of how they do it. And I'm not necessarily sure that's the game that you need to do. I think they're trying to take chances with that. And I understand that if you're coaching them to turn around the ball, it's still a guessing process. But to me, the nature of a cornerback is a nature of having the feel for the game. A good cornerback, the great cornerbacks in history, Melvin, have had tremendous instincts. Some, as we all know, seem to have had eyes in the back of their head, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I think you've got to find guys that can play like that. And I think the Patriots' philosophy of looking for value at that position is all washed up. I think you know when you've got an elite guy, and I think you've got to try to go out and get an elite guy in order to be able to sufficiently cover some of these elite physical receivers that are in the game today. It's kind of like let me see if I can come up with a good analogy here. It's kind of like putting fuel. Well, maybe that's not a good analogy. I keep wanting to say it's like a shiny Rolls Royce, and you're putting it through a car wash. You know, you don't need that. You need the hand cloth to go on the Rolls Royce. In other words, you're trying to cover elite players with less than elite players. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think it's a combination of several little things, but that it's not one big thing is why we seem to be having the problems in the secondary. I didn't make a very good analogy there because I was trying to come up with one off the top of my head, and I'm kind of brain dead through all of this today. But I think hopefully you get the point. I just think that it's just two or three little things, and it's not any one big thing. But I think they do need to spend some time evaluating better the skills of what it's going to take to be a solid, if not elite, corner in the NFL. And I think they feel like they can get players like that in the second and third rounds. Look at their record, with the exception of Devin McCourty. And Devin, arguably, is the best corner they have.
And that's not too good.
Well, but I'm just saying, they did spend a first-round pick on him. Now, maybe if they go out and they spend a first-round pick on another corner next year, all right, well, then maybe we're having something. Maybe we're getting to something. But they're not going to go waste a pick on a first-round corner if there's not a cornerback that's first-round talent.
Right, and that's the only thing I was talking about last week when I talked to Eric. I know he was, I guess he didn't agree with what I said, but I know that, of course, we need the talent. But I'm talking about changing up the method of how to get the talent. You're investing a lot in draft, and you're investing in this technique speech that they talk about a lot. But maybe you should just start evaluating the people that's already in the NFL, the people that you mm-hmm. already see. Maybe that would be a better issue, because you've tried on that issue through the draft and this technique issue numerous times, mm-hmm. and it's not working. It is so not working, it's not even funny. So, I just think that they need to bring somebody else in. Second, I know it's bad, it's money involved, it's the scheme involved, and you've had these people for a while, but according to what I've heard over the according to the PFW crew, that this wasn't getting fixed in the off season either. They were getting burned in the off season. So maybe you should have fixed it then.
That would just have to be an evaluation process, really, Melvin. I don't know any other way to put it. Then they're evaluating incorrectly. It's really the only way you can explain it then.
Right. So I just think that issue needs to be addressed. And maybe if not this week, Sanchez, everybody's doing it. Even late in the games, even late in the games when we get up, they'll be like, okay, forget all this, but you're going to throw on them.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning. And, yeah. It's just working. Mm-hmm. And whatever they're doing, if Sanchez is doing it, we have a serious problem.
Right.
Very serious problem.
I can't disagree with that at all.
Okay.
Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much. I'm not talking to myself as I hang on the phone. But that's good. I'll see you later.
All right, Mel. Thanks, man. Poor Melvin. Oh, he's a knowledgeable Pats fan. I'll give him that. Talking to himself out in the middle of nowhere of Tennessee. Love it. He's talking about what? Patriots football.
He just sings Rocky Top all night long to himself.
Oh, by the way, that is one of the more annoying fight songs that's out there. We should do that, Kevin. Next week, we got to do some different things during bye week. Well, we definitely have to play, you know, name that fight song, and we need to come up with, like, the most annoying fight songs, and we'll have Game Show Wednesday, and we'll do all that stuff next week, right? We'll talk about that later. All right, Tim in Baltimore says, John, it's good that I can listen to Patriots Radio live again. For a few months, I couldn't get my computer upgraded to the media player I needed, but I now have Windows 7, so now I am all set. Good, just in time for Windows 8 or 9 to come out. All right, he says, please let me be a geek for a moment. Uh-oh. I'm starting to equate the season with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Oh, man. Specifically, many geeks like me have argued that Frodo knew he wouldn't be able to get rid of the Ring of Power as soon as he first touched it. So for the whole quest, he knew that he would never be able to throw the ring in the fires of Mount Doom, but he still went there just because he knew there'd be a chance of something crazy happening. I'm just not a geek enough, I guess. I feel the same way about this defense. He says, even though we all know that the Pats can't stop anybody, there's probably not much hope, just a fool's hope. We just need to get to the playoffs because something crazy could happen. Good guys could win. Pats could get their fourth title, right? Okay. You kind of lost me with the whole Frodo thing. Daryl says, good try anyway. John, it's an ugly win. No arguing that, but you know what? I think this team needs to win ugly more often. I think the ability to win ugly is the key trait that's been missing from the Patriots since the championship years. Since 07, it seems like we only win pretty. In other words, we only win games where we score a ton of points and hold on to the lead. This game was the first time in a long time we were able to win in a dogfight. A dogfight where everything went wrong. To me, this win screamed 0-1. Even though it's not as pretty as what we're used to seeing around here, the ability to win ugly is the ability to win championships. Daryl, that's well said. Wreck him! That's well said. Like it. Like it. You do have to win the dogfights. And they arguably put themselves into a dogfight that they didn't need to put themselves into, but they still won it. That's a good point. Canadian Mike in Florida. Here's a couple of nitpicks from the game. Few catches by Lloyd, and this game isn't close. Talk about closing out games. He doesn't have to close out. He doesn't have a closeout mentality. He gets open, then he gets separation. But then he can't make the easy catches. This isn't something new either. He's always been able to make the tough catch and then mess up the easy ones. I said that earlier in the show, Mike, and you're dead on. That was one of my nitpicks. We agree. Brandon Lloyd, you know, has a habit of making the tough ones in the sideline routes, but the easy ones over the top and deep and, you know, somehow, ugh, it is a little maddening. He also says, I think the defensive philosophy is more of a problem than the personnel. Man-to-man is the way to go. Blitz, blitz, blitz. We need a blitz. I'd bet the Patriots blitz less than any other team, especially against rookies. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but if a blitz, if executed properly, will force most quarterbacks to check down or go to a hot route for a short gain. Only a few great quarterbacks can burn you with a long play. My point is, what do we have to lose? Our corners apparently can't play zone, so play man and then blitz. Our strength is the backfield, or in the backfield, is the safety. So man-to-man puts more emphasis on the safety making the right read. When you have athletic and skilled players as defensive backs, man-to-man is the way to go. Their instincts, which they may lack, come into play less in man-to-man. Just cover the guy, and a safety will blitz, and the other one tries to read the play. Mike, I think that's why you saw man-to-man more often this last week. I think they realized, you know what, we're probably better as a man-to-man team, and we may give up some yards, we may give up some receptions, but maybe we don't give up the big one like they did against Seattle, which cost them the game. But a very good observation by you. Jim in Florida, a win is a win. But the Patriots beat a not very good mistake-prone Jets team and have been outscored 34-6 in the fourth quarter over the last three games and just can't seem to close out games. I'm sure you'll get enough nitpicks from other fans on that topic. You're the first one, though, to mention the 34-6 margin in the fourth quarter over the last 3 weeks, which was nitpick number three on my list today. Goodness gracious! How do you let that happen with an offense like the one you have? 6 points over the last three games in the last three fourth quarters. That's a joke. And that's why when I opened the show today, I said my biggest nitpick, and I think I kind of been around it, but I will go directly to it now. Biggest nitpick is with the offense, above all. Even though they won the game in overtime, biggest nitpick is with the offense for not figuring out a way to score and not figuring out a way to move and not figuring out a way to win this game rather than play well enough to just not lose it. The offense had plenty of opportunity. And they've had plenty of opportunity over the last three games. His nitpick is Brandon Lloyd. He's an improvement over the 85 we had last year. Ocho was a complete bust, but Lloyd isn't putting up impressive numbers either. Yesterday he was targeted eight times, one catch for 6 yards, dropped two or three, got called for pass interference, can't seem to consistently get separation. Well, I think he can get separation, but I think some of the times they get separation, he gets away with a little push-off. And he didn't get away with that every time on Sunday. Jets' recent addition receiver, waiver pickup Stephen Hill, was targeted seven times, caught 4 balls for 55 yards. Lloyd was targeted 8 times, 1 catch for 6. So we can't keep excusing Lloyd's lack of production as he's still learning the system, especially when he's in a Josh McDaniels system, a coach and system Lloyd is familiar with. Come on, Brandon, get with the program. So it's a worthy nitpick. Worthy nitpick. Jordan from Prince George, British Columbia, says, have we forgot that this team is only 7 games into the season? This time last year, the Patriots were dealing with similar issues, and after going 5-3 at the half, they didn't lose a game until the Super Bowl. I'm from British Columbia, and I expect this type of whining every week from our Canucks fans. If the Canucks don't win by 4 goals, it's a loss in their opinion. Bruin fans are amazing. They don't whine as much as the Canuck fans, a team I support dearly. Give this team a chance. John, you're right. It's a shiny Rolls Royce of a team. You can't just jump in and rev to 8,000 RPM. You've got to break it in. Give McDaniel some time to work with his new addition, Phantoms, the tight ends, and give Brady a chance to get some rhythm with Lloyd. I know it's Nitpick Tuesday, and the secondary sucks more than... Oh, okay. Thanks for almost catching me on that one, Jordan. But let's relax, folks. God. Kevin, did you read that? That may qualify as the line of the year.
I'm about to read it, though.
Okay, yeah, read it. I can't read that on the air. I'm sorry, even if this is the internet. All right, let's go to Facebook, because we have a bunch of posters on Facebook as well. Let's see. Let's start with Axel. Okay, Axel, you win the coin flip here. A long one here. He says, hey, John and Kevin in the booth. First, I'd like to let you know that we do drink Smirnoff Ice here in Sweden. Uh-oh, here we go, Kev. We do drink Smirnoff Ice here in Sweden, but we actually have a Swedish liquor brand that is called Absolut, and if you ever come here, then you should definitely try it out.
Why don't you go back home to your street malls and drink your Zimas and Smirnoff Ices? Ooh, yeah!
I laugh every time I hear that. Ooh, yeah! Today I only have one nitpick. After the McCourty fumble, good thing I can laugh to myself, huh? After the McCourty fumble, I had a massive heart attack, and that led me to needing a heart transplant. The guy that gave me his heart was about 20 years
Don't
older
joke
than me.
About that. Come
I know.
On.
So now I'll die earlier than I was supposed to. God, where is Axel going here? I think he said too much of that Smirnoff Ice. Ooh, yeah. But more seriously, I think that you have to nitpick on pretty much everything except for Brady's ability to win a close game that came down to the wire. Is the comeback kid back? And can you not nitpick on Gostaski after he made a couple of very important field goals? But as we all know, they won, and that will keep me at least a little happy, especially when they won against the bleeping Jets. Other thoughts. What do you think of Dennard's performance? Personally, I think he was a lot more competitive than the others. He'll be better with some experience. I'll agree with that one. Two, do you see the Pats keeping all 5 running backs after the season? If not, who will they cut, trade? I can't answer that question. A lot of it depends on injury, if there is any. Three, four, I thought there was no chance that Welker was going to be gone after the season, but after this week, I'm almost sure he'll be gone. He didn't get the targets early in the game, and even though Edelman was back, Welker still returned punts. I've said all along, Axel, and I'll maintain it here, they're not going to pay him the money. I think they're going to give him an opportunity to see what kind of a deal he can get on the open market. They could franchise him again, but I don't think they want to pay him $11.5 million for 1 year. Now, he would probably agree. He would probably, if the Patriots would agree to a 3-year deal, Welker might take $8 or $9 million a year over the 3 years. He might. I could see 3 years at maybe, $26 million. I don't know if the Patriots want to pay that. I don't know how that really affects their cap. because I'm not really what I would call a capologist. Maybe we can talk to Eric about that tomorrow. But in all honesty, I don't know. Would the Patriots do that? Because I think Welker might take it. And he says, number four, I missed the play that Slater got killed on. Which play did Slater get killed on, Kev? Do you remember that? I don't either.
No, I remember him getting banged up in Seattle, but I don't remember him getting banged up in against the Jets here.
Mm.
He got hurt on a on elite special teams. I think it was the Seahawks' second to last drive. And he tackled Leon Washington, and he came up all funny.
Oh,
and, but he
yeah,
did play this
right.
past
week. I remember that. Yeah,
and I didn't see him leave this past week.
Okay. Mary Beth says, I thought maybe I would feel better after this week's game. Unfortunately, I just don't see anything out there, the offense. The run game has improved, but Brady doesn't seem to be playing Brady-like. His throws are a bit off the mark. His ability to see the open man is failing, and the defense is maybe getting better, but thought maybe I'd feel better. Hmm. Well, I guess, Mary Beth, I think we're all kind of in the same boat, to be honest with you. I think what we realize we have here is not the team that we thought we had at the beginning of the year. And I think that's something we're all going to have to kind of deal with here at the midway point. Tim says, probably a long nitpick, but on offense, Josh's play calling, he's never really impressed me as a play caller, including the unbeaten run in 07. I worry that he'll be Bill's successor when the day comes. Vereen starts, looks good, then we barely see him. Where was the no huddle? Tom calling plays in the two-minute drill, we move the ball at will, and McDaniel's calling them, we stutter and stumble. He says, I also don't like the drops. Never seen as many drops as this year. We've had a few drops this year. And then on defense, I don't want to hear any more people calling and raving about Dowling. The guy has shown us nothing. He can't cover anyone without holding. He's too stiff. He never looks comfortable. Even the few times we stop a completion, he gives up a holding elsewhere in the secondary. Correct. Special teams. When McKnight brings every kick out of past the 30, kick it out of the end zone. I only remember one touchback. That aside, welcome back, Gostkowski. Great field goals. He says, actually, forget my apology. If you have time for Secretariat and non-nitpickers, you have time for me. Yes, I do. I always have time for you, Tim. Good job. Michael on Facebook says, let's start with third down defense, nitpicking. First, I would rather see third and short than third and long. The defense seems to do better in those situations. Somehow, they seem to give up more yards and can't get off the field. Next up for nitpicks, let's try third down on offense. Too many of these situations in the first place, and then it becomes a toss-up, and the offense settles for field goals or has to punt because the offense just can't make a play. Next nitpick, how about keeping up some aggressive play calling instead of shying away and going ultra-conservative on both sides of the ball? Problem is that the play calling that is currently being used keeps other teams in games, and a prevent defense only prevents a team from closing out a game. That's a good point. And usually I leave this alone, but I saw a number of missed holding calls by the Jets' offensive line. I missed roughing the passer when a Jet pushed Brady to the ground after the whistle. And I saw several pass interferences that were not called on Jets' corners and safeties. Since Tom suggested fans are spoiled, is it fair to suggest that fans might expect any team to close out games and hold on to a lead well into the fourth quarter? That's also a good point, Michael. It's a good job. Katrina. Cat in Chicago. My nitpick for today, the number one biggest problem right now is coaching. I don't understand the offensive play calling. Brady can't get into a rhythm. Where's the short pass work? It's Brady's bread and butter. I would have to agree with that. And I think I mentioned that earlier on the show, Cat. Also, why do we insist on trying to run up the middle when we can't create a hole at the line? Run off tackles. Try a sweep. Clearly, we have some talent at running back right now. But yeah, we're not sure what we're getting, right? Says it makes me crazy. We're working against them instead of playing to their strengths. And I don't understand the defensive scheme either. Why are we playing zone? Well, they didn't play much zone this last week. And then she says, P.S., I'm going to start calling Lloyd Clifford Franklin. Can we get him some stick 'em, please? Seriously disappointed thus far. Clifford Franklin. He was the receiver in the movie The Replacements. You remember that now? Yeah, okay. There we go. See? They're like, Clifford Franklin, who's that? Oh, yeah, right. Okay, gotcha. Very good, Cat. Nikki says on Facebook, John, my nitpick is with the NFL Network. In the offseason, I bought the NFL Follow Your Team Game Pass for the Patriots so I could watch all the Pats games over here in the UK. Well, out of the first 8 games, including St. Louis, 4 of them are blacked out, so I can't watch live because the stupidly overpriced satellite television sports channels in this country were showing the game. So I've paid for a service where I can only watch the Patriots games, but I can only watch half of them. At least I actually get to see the St. Louis game on Sunday, as I'm going to be there. But that's not what the point. It's not like the blackout rules in the U.S. where if the stadium doesn't sell out, it's blacked out. This is just NFL Network grabbing as much money as they can and screwing the little guy. Well, geez, Nikki, I did not know that. But if they're blacked out on NFL Network, I guess that means they're on some over-the-air channel. So I would say, well, then why can't you get them? That would be the only question I have. Maybe I didn't understand your nitpick. But, yeah, if you bought something that, you know, would allow you to see every game and then you don't get every game, well, then you should go back to the company and say, you're telling me I can get every game and now I can't. See what they tell you in return. You know, stick their feet to the fire on this one. All right, that puts us out of time for the program today. My thanks to everybody who participated, because we had tremendous participation, email, Facebook. We had a couple of tweets come in today as well. So it's good stuff all the way around. Certainly the phone calls were going well on Nitpick Tuesday. Don't forget, though, coming up next, Fantasy Football Champs, Todd and Bill are coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. Eric joins us tomorrow from PFW. And then we start counting down to Wembley time on Sunday. Pats Rams in London. Got to hear from the UK fans. Let's do it tomorrow in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.